Bone of education.
Hit it.
What good is a radio show if it can't teach you about useless things?
Here, I've redorculated.
Open your minds and unzip your pants, because it's time for Bone of Education.
All right, Mike, we're going to travel back to just before the turn of the 20th century. This would be when the Biltmore House was built for George Washington Vanderbilt II. This was right around 1889 was when primary construction began on this residence. You've been to the Biltmore Estate.
Mm-hmm.
Ted, I forget, have you been to the Biltmore as well?
I have not, no.
Okay, all right. So it was just you and me both have not been, but Mike has been there. It is a legendary, gigantic mansion, chateauesque style mansion, which features, Mike, 178,926 square feet of floor space. It is the largest privately owned house in the United States. By the way, that amount of square footage equates to over 4 acres of indoor living space. Think about that. Have you ever seen 4 acres outside and then imagine all of that under one roof?
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
Heating and air conditioning bill, probably large.
Yeah. Well, I think it costs like 60 or 70 bucks to go through that place. I mean, they charge a hefty sum for attendance, which we will get to in a moment there. But it's still owned by George Vanderbilt's descendants. It remains one of the most prominent examples of Gilded Age mansions. So here's the backstory on it. As grandson of famed industrialist and philanthropist Cornelius Vanderbilt, George Vanderbilt II first visited Asheville, North Carolina in 1887, and he was on vacation with his mother. They went back to the Blue Ridge Mountains in that region a second time in 1888, and he says, "This is where I want to build what he initially termed a small summer home." It turned out to be a little more than a small summer home. He began purchasing land for what would become the Biltmore in 1889. This 250-room chateau began and became the largest undertaking in residential architecture in the country.
Isn't that crazy that it was a part-time residence?
Oh, yeah. He didn't live there full-time. Right. And really, very few of his descendants have ever lived there full-time. But over a 6-year period, an entire community of craftsmen came together to create America's premier home, an environmental wonderland that surrounds it. So the reason they call it Biltmore, this was what Vanderbilt came up with. He combined De Bilt, which is his ancestor's place of origin in the Netherlands, with the word more, which is spelled wrong, but it's M-O-O-R is the, you know, translated, you know, the word meaning open rolling land. So this is kind of a combination of those two words. That's how he came to Biltmore. He bought almost 700 parcels of land, including over 50 farms and at least 5 cemeteries. Portion of the estate was once the community of Shiloh, that no longer exists. In order to build such a large house, they had a woodworking factory and a brick kiln on site. The brick kiln produced 32,000 bricks per day. They also had a 3-mile railroad spur that was constructed to bring materials to the building site. Just think about that, right? Like, imagine you're building something so large today that they said, oh yeah, we're going to have to take a piece, we're going to have to create an on-ramp from 270 just to get out to where this guy is to build his house. And then we'll destroy all that eventually and not have it anymore. The construction on the house required the labor of about 1,000 workers and 60 stonemasons. He went on extensive trips, did George Vanderbilt, to purchase decor as construction was underway. He brought in tapestries, hundreds of carpets, prints, linens, and decorative objects, all dating between the 15th and late 19th century. Among the few American-made items in the home were the more practical oak drop front desk, rocking chairs, a walnut grand piano, bronze candlesticks, and I like this detail, a wicker wastebasket. Everything else was imported, but they did get the trash cans at least made in America. In 1895, on Christmas Eve, the country retreat of George Vanderbilt was opened to his family. The finished home contains over 35 bedrooms, 43 bathrooms, and 65 fireplaces. Just an unimaginable amount of opulence there. He eventually married Edith Stuyvesant Dresser in 1898 in Paris, France. They had a child, Cornelia. She was born at the Biltmore in the Louis XV room in 1900. She grew up on the estate. After George Vanderbilt's unexpected death in 1914, he had complications from an emergency appendectomy. his widow completed the sale of a bunch of land on the property to the U.S. government. That property became the nucleus of the Pisgah National Forest. That was part of Vanderbilt's request, was that it would never be developed or used. It would still maintain its natural beauty. So it is now National Forest. It's not privately held, but they sold it at a steep discount to the U.S. government. They eventually sold some of the property and some of the homes on the property to bolster their financial situation. But during the Great Depression, that was when Cornelia and her husband, the daughter who was born there, that's when they opened Biltmore to the public in March of 1930 at the request of the city of Asheville. They hoped that it would attract tourism to the region, and it did. Nowadays, you get over 1.4 million people every year who visit the region just to see that house. Also, back in World War II in 1942, 62 paintings and 17 sculptures were moved to the estate by train from the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. This is because they were fearful, the U.S. government was, that attacks would start happening on Washington, D.C., and if they did, they didn't want some of these precious works of art to be lost if Washington became under siege. So they moved them to the music room on the first floor, which was never finished, and that's where they kept a lot of these famous works, including works by Raphael, Rembrandt, and a famous painting of George Washington by Gilbert Stuart. Their younger son, William A.B. Cecil Sr., eventually lived at the estate in the late 1950s. He joined his brother. They managed the estate when it was in financial trouble. They brought it back up, kept it running, and eventually it was his brother, George Cecil, who inherited this entire property. In 1995, while celebrating the 100th anniversary of the estate, William Cecil and George Cecil turned over control of the company to William's son, and eventually it became still privately held. It stayed in the family for much of that time and still is to this day. But of the 8,000 acres that make up the Biltmore Estate, only 1.36 acres are in the city limits of Asheville, North Carolina. The Biltmore House is not part of any municipality. It's just kind of off on its own. Became a National Historic Landmark in 1963. And one other little piece of information I find interesting about this house, Mike, has a lot of landscaping, obviously, around it, beautiful gardens, mm-hmm. and flowing pools and things like that. All of that was designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, who is a landscape architect. Are you aware of what else Frederick Law Olmsted was known for building?
No, Bone, please tell me.
That would be Central Park in New York City.
Oh, okay. So he's done some things.
Grant Park, I believe, as well in Chicago, also an Olmsted project. So, yeah, he's done quite a few things over his time. So that's who you get when you're, the Vanderbilts. That's how well you can afford to have someone come in and do your landscaping is the guy who designed Central Park. Pretty cool.
Now, the old man who started all this, Cornelius Vanderbilt, in today's money, how much money did he have back then?
Yeah, that would have been
George, I know the answer.
That would have been George Vanderbilt's grandfather. The guy who built this is his grandfather you're talking about. I do not know. In today's money?
Railroad Baron Cornelius Vanderbilt. I will tell you that as of today, Jeff Bezos is still the richest man in the world. He's got about $185 billion.
Okay.
Are you going to say up or down on Cornelius?
I mean, I'm going to guess up just because of the way you're setting that up. So, yeah, I'll say $200 billion.
You are exactly correct. $200 billion is the amount of money. So if you're saying like, it's crazy that generations can never have to work. It's like, that's why.
Now when you have $200 billion. They did say, though, there were some concerns because, as I said multiple times, this property fell into financial concerns. So as much as that wealth did sustain the Vanderbilt family, I'm sure it's a very large family at this point, right? There's a lot of people still taking in that cash, and they use a lot of money to keep this place up. So that's why you have to pay to
go to
it.
Isn't that where Anderson Cooper's cash comes from?
I want to
say. Isn't he a member of the Vanderbilt family?
Yeah, I think you're right. I didn't know that until a couple years ago. But yeah, I know he's part of some famous wealthy family that has many generations.
I say his cash, I know he's not on CNN for free. So he's got his own cash now.
Yeah, but
he's probably
the
exception of Vanderbilt heir that works.
Yeah, he grew up, to your point, he grew up in a rich family is what you're saying. Very wealthy family, yeah.